Hi, Vera.
Hi, Z.
Have you watched any good movies lately?
Yeah, I watched a movie where a supervillain sprays diamonds everywhere like Sonic the Hedgehog when she takes damage.
Okay, but is it gay?
Do we come back from the theme song going yes, or
we can
normally we come back from the theme song with me going awoo because the theme song has a wolf howl in it. But honestly, this time we'll probably come back from the theme song on you saying, and do we come back from the theme song saying yes? Hello, everybody.
Cool. That means all this needs to be heard too.
All of this stays in. It stays in.
Yeah. So.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Okay, But Is It Gay? A podcast about gay movies where I have stolen the intro
because
from
because you're on theme.
Because I'm on theme. I do think if we were a superhero movie instead of a podcast, I would be the supervillain.
Why do you think this?
Next question.
Is it... No, hold on. I know why. You have the most sort of, like, I don't know, movie silhouette, I think.
That is true.
It's because they want to kidnap Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. I do have a movie supervillain silhouette.
Yeah, if you were very strongly backlit, we would be able to tell that it's you.
Yeah.
It's because they want to kidnap Timothy Dalton.
Oh, okay.
I could kidnap Timothy Dalton. I mean, not now, but like if in like the 1970s, sure. Hello, everybody.
Okay. Hi.
This is another episode of Okay, But Is It Gay? We are here with my best and oldest friend, Vera, who I have known for over a decade now.
Yeah, hi. We were literally like college roommates.
We met like the first week of college. We played together in a disastrous Dungeon World campaign. You introduced me to Gravity Falls. I laughed so hard I had to leave at one point.
You did. You were like almost mortally wounded by the character Blendon Blandon. Yes.
I'm sure I've told you this story before, but the first time I ever watched Gravity Falls, we got to the episode with Blendon.
Yeah.
And he said
he was from the year 11-70-12.
Yes. He said 20-70-12. And I laughed. I started laughing and couldn't stop. And like went home chuckling maniacally to myself the whole way.
I watched you from my window. Watched you leaving. Just still going... I was worried for you.
I laughed myself to sleep, and then I woke up the next morning still giggling. We're not here to talk about Gravity Falls, though.
No,
because it harms Z.
It harms me. I have not finished seeing it.
We've watched things that have harmed Z on this podcast before.
Yeah, but yeah. Usually...
Not this, though. No. This one was okay.
This was I would say, pleasant and charming.
We are here to talk about Debs 2004, directed by Angela Robinson.
Also written and edited by Angela Robinson.
Yes.
And you can tell.
St- starring Sarah Foster and Jordana Brewster.
Featuring guy I love to see in thing, guy I love to see in things, Jimmy Sims.
Simpson?
It might be Simpson.
Simpson. It's Simpson.
It has Jimmy been. Simpson. Who's Jimmy Sims?
Jimmy Sims is a guy. But Jimmy Simpson.
Yeah, that's a name I've heard.
He's got a BAFTA. Did you know he had a BAFTA?
Jimmy that's Simpson, crazy. Not Jimmy Sims.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah,
who may or may not exist.
Other guy addition, we like to see seeing things, Michael Clark Duncan is in this movie.
Man, I love to see in things, mostly because I enjoy looking at him, Scoot McNairy.
What? Why is that guy named Scoot?
I'm sure it is a Screen Actors Guild thing. Let's see. Okay, hold on. Let's see if I can find
all right.
John why he is called McNairy. Scoot. Well, if there's a John McNairy, then we will know.
He was born John Marcus McNairy, according to IMDb, and had the nickname Scooter.
Oh, I also had that nickname as a child.
Like the Muppet.
The thing about being friends with someone for over 10 years is that you learn new things about them every day.
I'm just reckoning with the fact that they're like, I could be Scoot Taylor.
You could.
If your life had gone in a very different direction.
Yeah. My dad called me that up until I transitioned, at which point he, like, sadly retired it as a nickname.
I think Scooter can be a girl nickname.
Yeah.
Scooter isn't gendered.
Oh. Oh, gosh. Sorry. Continue exploiting the actual thing.
Yes. Yeah, we're here to watch Debs. It is, depending on... where in the Wikipedia article you start paying attention, it is a 2004 film or a 2005 film or a 2003 short film or a 2002 short film or a series of comics that Angela Robinson wrote in college.
This does have, I will say that, you know what, I'll hold off on this, but that explains some things.
It explains some things.
Let's do trigger warnings really quick, and then we can get into Vera's point.
Yes. Trigger warnings. Homophobia.
Misogyny. Jimmy Simpson says the R slur in this because it was 2004. Yes. We're not going to say that on the podcast, obviously, but if you watch the movie, it did hit me.
You are going to hear it.
And there's spy movie typical violence and guns and sexual themes. Although this is a PG-13 movie, so there's no titties.
It has to be PG-13, like, at most. They censored... side note. How much... Am I allowed to swear? Is this a swear
podcast? You can say cusses, but you can't say the F slur. Yes, this movie is PG-13.
Yeah.
Hal wouldn't let me say the F slur on... an episode a couple of episodes ago where they said it in the movie a lot.
I just feel like we should be thinking about SEO.
Well, I'm gonna say the normal F word.
Yeah, that one's fine.
That one's fine.
This has to be PG-13 because in one of the songs that this movie just plays quite loudly as part of the soundtrack, they do censor the word fuck from one of the songs they licensed.
Mm. That sounds right.
They only get the one fuck in a PG-13.
So, this is a PG-13 film.
Yeah.
It is, like...
It's a spy 'em up. It's a Charlie's Angels. It's a Totally Spies.
Yes. This is in the Charlie's Angels, the Totally Spies era. It's like...
Secret Agent Cody Banks is in there, too.
True, like,
more so than should be, frankly.
This is kid spy era, although these aren't kids, they are college. No, aged.
Yeah.
They're about to graduate from college. So they're like early to mid 20s.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Debs is like, the program Debs is like community college. And then they're all hoping to move on to more serious spy programs in their bachelor's degrees.
And you go from Debs to the Bush School for International Relations.
Yeah.
At least one of these girls is ending up at the School of the Americas. It's a bad time.
Yeah, so normally at this point in the film, we would jump into the synopsis.
Uh-huh.
Here's the thing about the synopsis, is that, this movie is a better Wikipedia journey than it is a film.
Which is saying something, because it is one of the greatest films ever made.
It is an incredible piece of cinema.
Remaining respectfully quiet until you get through this bit.
However, the sort of story that the Wikipedia tells,
yeah,
is truly lovely. I really enjoyed it. And as alluded to earlier, it elucidates some things about this film.
Yep.
In the interest of that, instead of writing my own synopsis, and also because everything that happened in this movie left my head as soon as I stopped physically looking at it.
I had the opposite reaction. I'm never going to stop thinking about this movie.
See, okay, for me, I'm never going to stop thinking about the episode of Criminal Minds where that man had sandwich in him.
What?
For you... There's an episode of Criminal Minds where a man dies with a sandwich in his bullet wound.
We can't do this.
And every, I don't know, 6 weeks or so, I just message Hal, that man had sandwich in him.
They sure do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, Debs. The thing about Debs is that embedded in the SAT is a secret test that determines aptitude for espionage.
Mm-hmm.
Women who score highly on the test are recruited into Debs, a clandestine paramilitary academy.
If you're a boy and this happens, you get recruited by the dudes.
Or you go straight to Homeland Security in the case of Bobby.
And you have to imagine Homeland Security in a yellow impact font.
Yeah, that is just written on him at almost all times.
We can't remember, we can't forget why he is there.
So our squad, the Ninja Turtles,
yeah.
We have Max, who is a squad leader. Mm-hmm. She's the blue one.
No.
The blue Ninja Turtle? The red Ninja Turtle. No.
She's Raphael.
She's the red Ninja Turtle?
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, these don't match perfectly onto Ninja Turtles.
Max is Raphael for several reasons. One, because she gets demoted from squad leader over the course of the film and is salty about it, and should be. Two, she's black.
Three, angry.
This
will come up in later discussions of her portrayal in this film, I'll tell you.
And we're all in agreement that Dominique is Mikey, because much like Mikey, she is also French.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have Max. She's the squad leader. She is not the token black character in this film, but the token black woman.
Yes. And certainly on the team.
We have Dominique, who is French. She is always smoking one or more cigarettes. We have Janet. She's ditzy. She's sort of implied to be like religious.
She's sheltered in goody two shoes. Max is the one that's religiously coded.
Yeah, Max is Catholic. We know this.
Then there's Amy, who is just a woman.
She's the Leonardo.
I was going to map her onto the Donatella, because she's the one that's, like, smart. But my Ninja Turtles knowledge might not be deep enough to make this work.
I guess she is supposed to be the smart one. Yeah. She did write that whole thesis.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard.
Yeah, I will agree that she is supposed to be the smart one. She's framed as the smart one. No one in this movie behaves like a rational adult, no, except Michael Clark Duncan.
Then, basically, Lucy Diamond is back in the U.S. She's our supervillain. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, oh no, Lucy Diamond's back in the U.S. She's meeting with a Russian assassin. Turns out the Russian assassin, it's a blind date.
It's the funniest thing that's ever happened in a movie.
I do genuinely appreciate this part. I think it's very funny that, like, it's implied that, like, every intelligence agency in the United States has people staking out this restaurant because they think Lucy Diamond is gonna put in a hit.
Because she's meeting with an ex-KGB assassin who is now a freelancer to pay for her dance lessons. And Scud, her best friend, played by Jimmy Simpson, has set up this meeting. And they have this conversation before we get to the restaurant. They have this conversation about how, like, oh, this ex-KGB assassin is really good at what she does. She's super competent. Like, she's really scary. And then Lucy Diamond is like, well, I'm not going because I don't want to go on a blind date. And at first, it's like, oh, are they making that, are they saying that as a joke? Haha, blind date, because women? But no, actually, it is a date.
Yeah, it's a date.
Scud has found a woman for his best friend.
Yeah, so,
which,
go ahead.
It's very much played as the, like, you know, straight woman, gay best friend thing, just with the orientations flipped.
Yeah.
Because Scud functions in that role in this and most other scenes.
Your brain. See, how this is why I want to get Vera on the podcast. Because she's brilliant.
He's a best friend. He just happens to be straight.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right. And you should say it. Bobby shows up, crashes the Debs' stakeout, and...
We haven't explained who Bobby is.
Yeah, this is Amy, who is the main character, despite the first two scenes having me fully convinced Max was the main character.
Yes.
This is Amy's boyfriend, who is...
Ex-boyfriend. Okay, so the establishing scene...
As of the first scene.
Yes, the establishing scene is... The thing that I've written in my notes is this is why Jerry totally spies, just sucks the girls into a tube whenever he needs them. Because Michael Clark Duncan's face has appeared on every surface in the Deb sorority house. And he's like, come on, we have a meeting. And our establishing shots for all of the girls are Max wakes up, is startled, and immediately pulls out her gun. Janet can't find her gun and is looking around for it and finds it in a teddy bear. Amy is ignoring messages from her ex-boyfriend, Bobby, who is, imagine the most blockheaded man you've ever seen.
This may or may not help depending on the average age of your listenership. You know Buffy's boyfriend from the season where she was dating a cop? That guy.
Yeah.
It's right.
And Dominique has a boy in her room, even though they're not supposed to have boys upstairs after curfew.
And is smoking in bed.
And yeah.
Because
she's French.
And also, this is one of the things that I like about this movie. They all have, like, personalized guns. Like, they all have guns that match their personalities.
I did flag up in my notes that, like, I like that the French one has an Uzi. Mm-hmm. It's very French of her.
But yes, Bobby, because Amy has been, like, dodging his calls, Bobby shows up at their stakeout. And, like, there's a cute bit of physical comedy where, like, Bobby is on, like, a quick line And the girls are all on like swings.
And it's like, Bobby, what if a window washer's platform was like an individual? What if a window washer's platform, but also a circus swing, and also purpose made for espionage?
Yeah, and just hanging completely visibly, as mm-hmm. evidenced with people look up, just from the roof of a restaurant.
In their very short skirts. The other thing that I have in my notes from earlier is that there are multiple, we see lots of other Debs in their uniforms. Every other Deb that's not in the main cast has a knee-length skirt on. And I think that's the funniest shit in the world.
That didn't even register to me.
Every single one of them. There's no other midriffs showing. Everyone is wearing a tie and like it's properly under their collar and their shirts are buttoned up. And they all have knee-length skirts on. Or in one very memorable scene, plaid shorts.
This is like, this is something we can get to when, like, again, one of my, like, list of things, nice things to say about this movie for this part where we all say one nice thing about this movie.
Yeah.
This is a movie that cares deeply about, like, the details.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at one point, Lucy and Scud are sitting on a couch made out of the back of a car, and it is the same type of car that Lucy drives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what type of car. I'm not a car guy, but it's the same one. It's like, this is a movie that very much cares about its details. I just wish it were, you know, overall better. So this blind date goes badly, and it's all Bobby's fault. We all hate Bobby.
Yeah.
A shootout ensues, during which Max reminds Janet that she has not yet earned her Deb stripe. This is a plot line that doesn't matter. It will come back, unfortunately.
It's nice that Janet gets an arc.
It is nice that Janet gets
an arc. Does she, though?
It would be very easy.
She starts at one point and is at a different point at the end of the movie. That's an arc.
It would be very easy.
That's 2 points.
Yeah. It would be very easy for Janet to be completely one-dimensional in this movie. And she isn't, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
We'll get there. In the ensuing escape sequence, Lucy and Amy end up holding each other at gunpoint. They make homosexual eye contact.
They sure fucking do.
And Amy panics. Lucy runs away, scattering diamonds on the floor.
I need to flag up. She scatters diamonds everywhere when they run into each other. Again, to like Sonic's rings, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
That's our calling card. That's how they know that Lucy Diamond's been there.
They literally handfuls. Do pick up the diamonds like, oh shit, she was here.
And also, like, they're not small diamonds.
No.
No.
Like,
they're... She scatters hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of diamonds every time she hits something.
Lucy then decides to kidnap Amy.
Normal reaction to having a crush on a pretty girl.
Lucy initially says she wants to help Amy on her thesis, but ends up coercing her into joining her at a nightclub, along with Janet, who witnesses Lucy speaking to Amy. During this trip, Lucy and Amy grow closer and have a conversation about their lives and relationships. Lucy even clarifies that the deaths of the agents sent after her were happenstance.
Boo. Bad choice movie. More
she talks
evil
about
women.
An Ebola outbreak in Peru, and I'm pretty sure there is not Ebola in Peru.
Yeah, no, I did write that down with, like, Ebola in Peru, racist,
There's stagnant water in Peru.
But there is not Ebola.
There are many tropical diseases and the like that you can get in the more tropical parts of Peru, but not Ebola.
They almost kiss, but Janet is like, oh my god, Amy, that supervillain is trying to kiss you. Get out of there.
And now she owes Scud $50.
Yeah. Then the stupid part of the movie happens.
Oh, just now.
Yeah. Amy is promoted to squad leader for no reason.
for surviving an encounter.
Well, because she had physical contact with Lucy Diamond and lived to tell the tale, which no one else has ever done. And also, the like admin at this school is incompetent.
I acknowledge that there's a textual reason given. When I say for no reason, I mean that it's stupid and I don't like it.
Yeah, it's just to set up conflict within the squad over the leadership position.
Because Max was squad leader and now she's been demoted.
And the, again, going back to the Ninja Turtles, those are different jobs. Like, there's a reason the purple one is not the squad leader. He's the smart one. Donatello. He's the smart one, but the blue one is the squad leader?
Yeah.
The blue one is the leader, yes.
Because he has the leadership skills. Those are different jobs.
Yeah.
And the head of Debs doesn't get that. And, like, she's, like, after the, the Acclaim. That's what she's in it for.
She's like, in the espionage business, and ideally nobody knows that you exist when you're in the espionage business.
Yeah, the best spy dies, like, unrecognized, obviously.
Lucy Diamond robs a bank and sets the most obvious trap on God's green earth, which Max
does flag up, like, hey, this is a trap. And
Amy hasn't taken any of the leadership courses at Deb's university or whatever.
She's too busy writing her feminist thesis.
Yeah. I'm sorry, if you're a gender studies major, you don't get to be squad leader.
Amy gets kidnapped. And Lucy is like, come with me. And then they go make out for a week.
Yeah.
We love that for them. I just want another thing that I want to flag up a couple times. This movie loves itself a montage. This is the weakest one because it's like the falling in love montage that like all of the emotional stakes of the rest of the film hinge upon, and most of it is them laughing girlishly while like slapping various technological equipment. Girls, that's just like a plasma ball. You can buy those at like TJ Maxx. No, Vera,
it's not a plasma ball. It's a supervillain contraption.
Yeah.
Doofenshmirtz made that in Nader, and you're going to come in here and slander the whole thing. Exactly. Unbelievable.
I'm just saying the montage is very silly because it's trying to show them having like a good time in the evil lair and stuff, but like they don't have much of an evil lair, so it's just sort of two women existing around some bombs.
And it's great.
From it, like external establishing shots, we do know that Lucy Diamond's secret lair is in like a disused, allegedly disused like power station.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big, like not neoclassical, Art Deco maybe,
yeah.
Like a big Art Deco power station that people who know LA buildings will probably yell at me for not knowing. It's like a cool lair conceptually. However, on the inside, all they have is the couch that matches Lucy's car, the globe with a big red X over Australia, and the plasma ball from the arcade.
And the big laser.
There is the big laser they want to use to destroy Australia.
They do have a big laser.
During this whole time, Janet is trying to get in touch with Amy and be like, hey, everybody's looking for you. Like, be safe, presumably.
While they're having their falling in love montage, a second sort of intercut montage is happening of Homeland Security doing a bunch of police brutality to try to find her because they think she's in danger.
This is growth from Janet. Because earlier in the film, she called Amy a gay whore.
No, she called her a gay slut and a normal whore.
You're right. My bad. This is growth from Janet. But Amy's not picking up her phone. Because she's too busy?
No. And at the same time, hang on. At the same time, Janet is also emailing back and forth with Scud. And at any point, she could have been like, P.S. Is Amy in the secret base? Because she needs to know that the whole world is looking for her. And it could break bad at any moment. Because it could break bad at any moment.
Yeah, no, she fully had access to, like, Lucy's organization via Scud. Because they're having, like, a beta romance sort of in the background of many mm-hmm. montages. That I wrote Scud no when I realized they were going to make him straight.
Then the Russian assassin from earlier sees Amy and Lucy at, what is it called? The junk dump? This dive bar has the worst name in history. The junk pit. Another, like, very cool, like, abandoned Art Deco building. Is LA mm-hmm. just full of abandoned Art Deco buildings? Because...
Yes, what do you mean?
I didn't know this about LA. I assumed it was all, like, terrible suburbs.
The, like, LA proper had, like, its big building boom in, like, the teens and 20s yeah. with the beginning of Hollywood. There's mm-hmm. a lot of cool Art Deco stuff out there. Like, L.A. proper, not like L.A. County. Yeah. That's mostly terrible suburbs.
So, they get a tip that leads Homeland Security from, and the Debs.
No, say who it's from. Say who it's from.
It's from the Russian assassin. I already said that part.
Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Yeah, which I do want to say, when they flash up the profile for the Russian assassin... they do say that she's needy, volatile, and vengeful, which is why her getting, like, having a bad date has led to this, to mm-hmm. her, like, betraying Lucy in this way.
This woman, this actress, Jessica Caulfield? Hold on, is that a typo on IMDb, or is this woman's last name?
No,
Jessica Caulfield.
It's on Wikipedia.
She's mm-hmm. in Legally Blonde. Mm-hmm. She has not acted since 2009. And she is reprising her role as Margot in Legally Blonde 3.
Nice.
Noted.
She's also in My Name is Earl, which is a show I like to see and talk about.
This is a preview of our Patreon exclusive My Name is Earl rewatch podcast.
Hal, you joke, but I would rewatch My Name is Earl in a heartbeat. I keep trying to get you to do a Burn Notice rewatch podcast, but you said no.
Because I don't want to watch Burn Notice.
Keep jokingly pitching rewatch podcasts. Eventually you'll say one that, like, a specific one that I know that will activate them like a sleeper agent and force you to actually do it.
We have to get the romance novel podcast off the ground first.
Here's the thing about being friends with someone for 10 years, is that Vera will routinely say some ominous shit like, I know a specific television show that will activate you like a sleeper agent, and I have no idea what she means. And then she's right. She's just correct. anyway... They get Amy back. There's, like, this whole thing where they're like, we're gonna make it seem like Amy was suffering not having, you know, a U-Haul lesbian moment.
A torrid affair.
Mm-hmm.
And,
worth bringing up, I think, is that initially they're like, not in exactly this phrasing, but we're gonna throw you under fucking Leavenworth for this. And then mm-hmm. Max is the one that suggests the gentler plan, where we just force you back into the closet.
Because it'll look better
for
the admin if they're top student. Because the thing with Amy is that she got the perfect score on the secret test hidden inside the SAT.
Yeah, so her... So
they refer to her as the perfect score throughout the movie.
Which is just so clunky and awkward every time.
It's also a...
But it's a double entendre.
It's also a great way to give a kid so much trauma.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Max convinces the administration that, like, eh, your perfect student going down for something like this would be, like, a black mark on the academy. You need to cover this up. But also, like, I don't want my friend to be put in, you know, mega jail. Because mm-hmm. I'm resentful about the promotion, but she is still my friend.
Yes.
But the net result of this is admin basically going, cool, kid, we're not going to throw you in jail. We are going to throw you back in the closet, though.
This movie said you can be gay or you can be a cop. You cannot be both.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they go to prom. Lucy Diamond has been on a reverse crime spree where she, like,
I hate it.
She is, because she thinks this is how she's going to win Amy back. She does a reverse crime spree. This is Lucy Diamond's Dark Night of the Soul. If in romance novel parlance, this is Lucy Diamond's lowest moment.
Yeah.
She has lost Amy and she thinks, obviously the way I get Amy back is by changing everything about myself.
She even attempts to take the SAT and therefore the secret test hidden inside of the SAT, but she can't stop herself from cheating and the proctor throws her out.
I do want to flag up her initial response here, which I thought they were going to go with, and I was like, okay, cool, we're finally, like, I finally am interested in this character, is to destroy Australia about it. And then Scud's like, no, you should try to think about what she likes, which is heroism.
Scud is like, you cannot destroy Australia. We've been over this. Lucy Diamond has it out for Australia, and I think she just needs to go there.
Well, that's where her ex is from. Her ex that she had the bad breakup with 2 years ago is Australian.
Ah. Yeah.
That's why she hates Australia.
Normal reaction.
So she goes on a reverse crime spree. There's a really bad dance montage with Lucy and Scud.
And they're like lip syncing with a broom and stuff.
No.
It is.
It's the best. It's the best part of the movie.
How? I enjoy it. I enjoy it conceptually. In execution, it's not synced up to the music right. When I say it is the worst.
Were you experiencing latency? I did not notice the desync.
I didn't notice the desync. I did think it was a poorly done montage.
2004, that's how shit looked back then.
They had figured montages out by the 80s, I think.
Mm-mm. They are at prom and or cotillion. Your mileage may vary. I just kicked
and my or graduation.
Spy prom. It's called Endgame.
Yeah.
And Bobby's like, are you and me going to Endgame together? Are you and me Endgame? And Amy's like, yeah, sure. But actually,
Max has written like a valedictorian speech or maybe a prom queen speech for Amy.
She's accepting the most prestigious Debs award there is, the Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
And this speech is very much like about, like, oh, you know, I persevered through this horrible trauma that, you know, is talking about, like, her lesbian relationship and stuff. You know, and this is obviously making her very uncomfortable, but she's going through with it for, like, propriety or whatever.
I know writers who use subtext.
Yeah.
No. And they're all cowards.
Yeah. The Garth Marenghi gif could apply in most parts of this movie.
Because this... We'll get to it. So, Amy sees Lucy in the balcony. There's like a whole chase sequence where Bobby is chasing Lucy through the hotel. Lucy scatters some more diamonds. And then, like, Amy is giving this speech. She sees Lucy on the balcony and is like, actually, fuck this. I'm a lesbian. Bye. And then Scoot McNair runs in smoking a joint and yells, Lucy Diamond is here. Everybody run for your life. And everybody panics.
I don't know how they're gonna make it in the espionage business if one supervillain makes them chaotically exit this building.
There, I guess there are a lot of, like, civilian boyfriends here.
I feel like all of the boyfriends are in Homeland Security.
And, like, maybe a bunch of these people are, like, they're, like, the you know, sit-at-a-desk type of spy, you know?
Maybe.
They're not field agents.
But they should still be exiting while mindful of trampling.
Yeah, we do get a lot of shots of people in formal wear, like, charging full tilt into furniture and, like, tumbling over it and stuff.
Oh, and
it's a real panic to
escape. I know the exact shot you're talking about. That woman did not fall on purpose. I think that extra got actually hurt in that shot.
Yeah.
It looked like a pretty significant tumble, that old lady.
Ma'am, I hope you're okay. In a, like, parallel to the scene where they first meet, Lucy and Amy...
Slow motion running!
Lucy and Amy run down separate corridors in the cheap and large object warehouse. I think it's like rolls of butcher paper or something.
Yeah.
And they end up having this like teary reunion. They've known each other for 45 minutes and they've both said I love you twice. Mm-hmm.
This has happened to me before, you know.
Listen.
It occurs.
They have known each other for a week.
Hal, my longest relationship was over a year long, and I never said I love you. 1 week?
That is a problem that you have in your personal life. That's not Lucy Diamond's problem.
1 week is unfathomable to me.
So, this might be getting into something too sensitive to discuss on the podcast, so feel free to, like, stop me or cut this. But you know how we occasionally have this recurring discussion of, like, you know, your exact sort of gender placement? This is how I know you're not, like...
This is how you know I'm not a woman?
All the way over on my side.
Yeah, no, I... Listen. The actual answer here is that, to me, saying the words I love you has 100% of the time felt fake. I will always make sure that you have been fed. I will help you move out of your apartment. I will help you clean your apartment after it burns down. I will express my love in many, 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 many ways. Saying mm-hmm. I love you to me, waste of time.
Okay. This is just like how you came out against kissing.
What?
Oh, I think kissing is a waste of time.
This is something they've said. Yeah. This is the exact same thing.
Wow, you would really judge how I spend my time.
Listen, okay. I think kissing is a waste of time past a certain point, because after a certain point, there are other things I would rather be doing with my mouth. Anyway, the whole squad rallies behind Amy and Lucy, and
yeah,
they ride off into the sunset.
There's a really good moment where Max is pointing a gun at Lucy, and Scud comes up behind her and is like, "Don't point a gun at my best friend," and Lucy is like, Scud, don't point a gun at my girlfriend's best friend. And Scud's like, okay.
And that is where the film ends, more or less.
Yeah. My last note is all caps, Barcelona.
Yeah, because the Amy's sort of central arc, aside from, you know, figuring out she's a lesbian, mm-hmm. is that she doesn't really want to be a spy. She wants to, like, do art in, you know, on the Mediterranean coast. Like, you know, everyone would if they had infinite money.
And she has a girlfriend who can offer her infinite money because she's made of diamonds.
Exactly. Yeah. But that is something I did kind of flag up in my notes, is she gets the whole, like, dream versus duty, like, conflict laid on her pretty obviously, but instead of from the usual source, father, it's from Max. In the scene where they're like hanging on the swing set, Max is like, hey, like, I don't care if you want to do art. You have like a job to do that you signed up for here. Like, you can go have dreams some other time. This is my dream. We're doing my thing. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
that usually you get that from an overbearing dad with a mustache.
But there are no parents in this movie.
Not a one.
No.
Lucy Diamond's father is referenced, but he is not appearing in this film.
The former head of the Reynolds crime syndicate.
But yeah, so like a lot of Amy's arc that like parallels the sexuality stuff is being like, just because I'm good at lying, which Michael Clark Duncan does show up and go like, your superpowers, you're good at lying, kid. That's what the test is. Don't worry about
which
it.
Which is true. This is like, I do want to linger here for a
which,
minute.
Which, A, she's not.
Yeah.
Like, the implication is that like, you've been lying to yourself this whole time, like, and I think the truth of this scene is that like, being gay makes you good at lying. Like, being in the closet is, like, a constant series of, like, performative lies. Yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I see where you're coming from, Angela Robinson.
Here's the thing. The secret test within the SAT does not measure a student's aptitude in reading, writing, or arithmetic. But the SAT doesn't measure that either. It measures your ability to pay for the test and have an afternoon.
They also say, like, this conversation with Michael Clark Duncan that Vera has brought up, it is treated as, like, a big reveal. Like, it is treated as a moment where, like, this whole time Amy is like, oh, I got the perfect score, and Lucy's like, what does that even mean? But, like, in the title sequence, they tell us.
They do tell us what it means.
It does not measure a student's capacity in reading, writing, or arithmetic. It measures their capacity to lie, cheat, steal, and whatever the fourth one is.
Kill, in fact.
Kill.
And I do want to say, the intro to this is delivered by a guy doing the most, like, intense, like, spy movie voice.
It's the In a World voice. He might as well be saying, in a world where the SAT does not measure a student's aptitude in reading, writing, and arithmetic.
But yeah. And it's great.
So, like, you know, Amy's whole thing is, like, she doesn't actually want to be a spy. She wants to do this other stuff. She has to be honest with herself and pursue her dreams instead of the expectations placed on her. It's a fine core arc. It's just framed oddly in a lot of places because the movie doesn't make a lot of sense.
This movie reminds me of...
Are you about to steal my observation or make your own?
I'm... Okay, you go first. You finish. And we'll see if what you're about to say is what I was about to say.
No, you go first. Sorry.
This movie reminds me of the Wachowski Speed Racer.
Not where I was going. Continue.
If
I want to hear more about Speed Racer.
So my main contention about the Wachowski Speed Racer is that if it had been made 4 years later, it would be a perfect film. They were on the cutting edge of a lot of things that, like, the technology and, like, the industry and, like, consumer tastes were just not, like, aligned for. At the core, they have, like, a good story with, like, a lot of meaning and a lot of, like, heart behind it.
Mm-hmm.
However, that movie hurts to watch with your human eyes.
See, I like Speed Racer. I think it looked normal and fine.
If it had been made 4 years later, if it had been 2012 instead of 2008, it would be a whole different ballgame.
Agreed, yes.
That said, like, the writing in this movie, there's a lot of really good concepts. This movie cares very much about its world. It cares very much about its characters, with an asterisk on that one.
I was gonna say it cares about two of them.
It cares about like what it means to like, you know, be the most elite super spy. It cares about what the couch looks like that the villain is sitting on. It cares about like putting a big red X on Australia. It just, if you think about it with your human brain, it hurts a little bit.
And why would you do that?
See, I would almost push back against at least one of those, which I'm not sure this movie does care about the spy stuff particularly. Like, one of the things that I found really dragged about it is that it's like the parts of it that are like a spoof of Charlie's Angels or you know, like spy movies generally, it's a very shallow spoof in a lot of ways.
Because I think like, because this movie says you can be a cop or you can be gay, you cannot be both. I do think that's on purpose. Like, I think like the spy world is not like this movie cares about like, what I'll say is this movie cares about like Debs as an institution. We learn that Amy is in the gender studies track. She is writing her thesis on what it means to be a female supervillain in a male-dominated field. You know, Max is in the leadership track. Dominique is in the smoking cigarettes track. And I think this is probably a good time to bring in the short film. Because the movie is stretching the conceit so thin, like, it starts to fall apart. The spoof becomes shallow because they have an 11-minute concept that they're trying to make a 90-minute movie out of.
This is why Totally Spies made Spycraft genetic.
I don't remember the lore of that, really, but that seems like a thing they would do.
The main three girls in Totally Spies all have the spy gene, and that's why they're so good at being spies, even though they're 16.
Huh.
In the later seasons, this is what the show is about. That's why when Mandy does Cordelia and gets recruited to Whoop, she's bad at it because she doesn't have the spy gene.
Totally Spies rewatch podcast.
I don't remember the lore of this show very much. I have a very different recollection of it, which was primarily gender envy based, I think.
Yeah, that checks out. That makes a lot of sense. My experience of Totally Spies,
I forget which one of them it is, but the green one, you know.
Alex? Sam. No, Alex is the yellow one.
Sam.
Yeah, Sam.
Yeah.
So the short film Debs came out in 2003. It was kind of a festival darling. It is
we love a festival darling on this podcast.
We get a lot of them. It is 11 minutes long. It is, in many ways, it feels like an episode of Totally Spies. We are launched in with like a title sequence. We get like a good action montage. And we learn that Amy is like, every time they go toe to toe with Lucy Diamond, Amy gets kidnapped.
And this is on purpose because they're dating.
Yes, they have a 24/7 extreme kink lifestyle.
That's not what we said.
And you know, that involves Lucy Diamond kidnapping Amy, the rest of the Debs trying to rescue rescue Amy, and Amy and Lucy having like insane, mind-blowing lesbian sex, like, as
3 minutes at a time between rescues.
Exactly. Yes.
And like the crux of the short and why it works is more than just a one-off gag is that in the midst of that, they do have a discussion about like, you know, like, is this a real relationship to you? It's kind of tough to tell, things of this nature.
Yeah, and like the short film is incredibly like tight. It's incredibly well written. It plays around a lot.
They somehow still get the Janet Scud thing in there in about 2 seconds.
They have the empty box factory. It's the same rolls of paper. Like, so this short film was made with a grant from an organization called Power Up. It's like a women in the entertainment industry. Like, it is an organization that was designed to, help women in the entertainment industry, like, get their short films made, get their movies made, et cetera, et cetera. And I am now reading from the Wikipedia page for Power Up. In 2001, Kay Pearson Brown, one of the founding members, brought a sexual harassment suit against another founding member, Stacy Kotikow. Kotikow countersued, et cetera, et cetera. Kotikow demanded Brown's resignation on the grounds that she was bisexual. That's a whole sentence in this Wikipedia page.
From like a straight women afraid of bi women or like a lesbian exclusionary thing?
I believe the latter.
Okay.
Because they did fund this movie. They did fund
that
Debs.
Yeah, it would make sense that they're not that directly homophobic. Yes. Okay.
Stated mission to promote the visibility and integration of gay women in entertainment, the arts, and all forms of media.
Okay, so it's lesbian originating biphobia. Got it.
Yeah. Angela Robinson got a $20,000 grant to make this short film. That short film was a festival darling. As a result of being a festival darling, this movie attracted the attention of the president of a production company called Screen Gems, which then gave it the green light. We get the full 90-minute feature film. That turnaround, the short film came out in 2003. The feature film came out in 2004.
So
they didn't have enough time to world build, is what you're saying.
They didn't have enough time to do anything. That's why the sets look like that.
They didn't have enough time to do a second draft, is sort of my main...
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
I think that given, like, another year of production and maybe another couple million dollars... because the budget for this movie was $3.5 million, which is...
That's not a lot.
Nothing.
And I will say, it looks like it was about half of that.
Because it was like 2003, a lot of that budget went into the special effects.
And music licensing, because they use a lot of licensed music.
And music licensing. I think, like, I genuinely think, like with Speed Racer, this movie came out 4 years later, this would be a much different conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This movie has such good conceit. It has such good parts. If you describe it abstractly, like Janet's arc, for example, she goes from being naive, goody-two-shoes, coming around to the idea that like Amy and Lucy being together is like not just okay but like a good thing because it's what makes Amy happy. That's a great arc. That's a great that sounds lovely. And then you watch the movie and it's just like, oh, you didn't have time to do a second draft.
Mm-hmm. I broadly agree with you, yeah. I think that agreed 100% on the conceptual thing, because I will say I was describing this to CNI's mutual friend Daisy, just based on the Wikipedia summary. And she was like super intrigued. She was like, oh wow, I can't believe they made like a, you know, like toxic Yuri genre piece in the early 2000s. And I had to message her afterwards, like, they did not, I'm afraid.
they made a toxic Yuri genre piece in the early 2000s. It was just the short film.
Yeah, which, like, that is something I want to get into a lot with, like, part of how this disappointed me with, like, its concepts is they make, like, this movie gestures at being PG-13, you know? They say shit, the, you know, there's smoking and there's sex jokes and things of this nature. It's so tame and safe in everything it does, though, in a way that, mm-hmm. like, the short film wasn't. You know, the short film allowed, you know, not nudity, but some degree of intimacy, some degree of, like, you know, actual violence. Like, people get shot in that. And, like, Lucy, as part of the ruse, like, full-on hits Amy and stuff. And, like, that's, that edge is just completely absent in the film.
Yeah.
And it really suffers for it, because it's, like, so much of the stakes feel drained out of it by the supervillain's big plans being carrying bags of money with a big dollar sign out of a bank and things of this nature. Like, the villains feel so Disney Channel original movie. I called this thing DCOM core, because it feels like a Disney Channel original movie that got let off the leash and allowed to say shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing.
So, like, a Discovery Kids original movie.
Oh, I was thinking Disney Channel original movie.
No, but, like, if a Disney Channel original movie got let off the leash, then it would be a Discovery Kids original movie.
That's true. Oh, no, you know what this reminds me of in terms of, like, building up, like, all this villain's so scary, don't worry, they don't actually hurt anybody. The Discovery Kids, Strange Days at Blake Halsey High. That is what this feels pitched at. Is a TV PG Canadian children's show about science education.
Yeah.
But without even the educational components.
I mean, and, like, you know, this movie made cost $3.5 million. It made five figures. I think it's 97 something.
Oof.
$97,446.
My kind of movie.
How do you market this movie, right? Like, how do you, when you're putting this movie in theaters, like, it's not a children's movie.
No.
Certainly not in the early 2000s.
It's not, like, appealing to adults because it's playing in children's genre space.
Yeah, like, but it confuses me because lesbian kid spy thing pitched at, like, 12-year-olds in terms of, like, tone. You could probably have pulled that off, I won't say now, but 2 to 3 years ago. Like, at the time, you're already, like, barred from any sort of children's market by virtue of, like, the content of, you know, having a lesbian romance. So just make it for adults? Maybe?
Yeah. Like make it for adults. Like, really lean into it. Like, I don't know how you successfully market this movie. I think that's a big part of the reason why it was a huge flop.
Yeah.
I also think, like, you know, unquestionably, like, you should have given it more time. You should have given it more money. Like, this is not a, I mean, it is a movie you can churn out in a year. They did that, clearly.
Yeah, they should not have.
They should not have. And, like, Angela Robinson is, like, a good filmmaker. Like, she continued to work after this. She has, like, worked on The L Word. She's worked on True Blood. She's worked on a bunch of HBO stuff. She, in 2021, she signed an overall deal with Warner Brothers. Like, this is a woman who has gone on to continue to make television and movies. In 2017, she made that movie about the William Moulton Marston. This is a woman who can make movies. I wish they had given her another year to make this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does feel like a time thing in a lot of ways, like you're saying. I do think there are some issues that would not have been ironed out just by a few more passes at the script and a higher budget. The way it handles Max, I think, would piss me off even if it was done well. Things of this nature. But it's undercooked is its fundamental flaw.
This movie is undercooked, but Lucy's license plate, in disguise.
Yes. Because she's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. She is a Beatles reference. That, to be clear, doesn't mean anything to the character, seemingly.
She is Lucy and she has Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if this was an edgier thing where,
it's about the vibes.
The lesbian relationship was framed as more of like a high, and we were allowed to have that level of complexity, I might buy it a little more. Sorry, I could keep harping on that forever. I need to stop saying, to be edgy, have teeth in your spoofs.
but you're right, though. I mean, that's part of why, that's part of why the short film works and the full-length film doesn't. There's a bit from the short film where Michael Clark Duncan's character, it's not Michael Clark Duncan in the short film.
Yeah, it's just some guy. I don't think he's anyone we would have heard of. He's just a guy.
He says, Lucy Diamond is, or Lucy in the Sky is back in the States. I don't have to tell you how dangerous she is. Or I don't have to tell you what that means. And Janet says, what does it mean? And he goes, I literally don't have to tell you. And that's just that is the punchline. That's the end of it. It's good. The spoof is good. Angela Robinson is playing with these tropes in a very pointed, very intentional way. It's very funny. That doesn't carry through to the 90-minute version.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. that's a really good example, because in the 90-minute version, had they done that exact gag, which they don't, because they over-explain everything.
It would be the one gag that they do.
Well, it would be, Janet would then get a response of okay, but I don't know, nobody told me. And then, Dominique would say something rude in a bad French accent. that's how all the jokes sort of flow in the full-length film. They're too long. They're too drawn out. It's like punchline. Did you get it? Rude thing in a French accent.
Penny of the YouTube channel Snapcube once did a stream, yeah, where she made herself read Control-Alt-Delete comment.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, I just went, oh, God, and started laughing.
Okay.
Just conceptually, I'm like, oh, I know where this one's going.
And she, so she does a stream where she makes herself read Control-Alt-Delete comics. I think every time she lost at Peggle 2. But she, at one point, just, stops, and she's like, here's the problem with Control-Alt-Delete. And, breaks down this comic and is like, this is a four-panel comic with the punchline in panel two.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's there's a similar problem with the comedy in Debs. It is a, mm-hmm. it is, the punchline is in, the second or third bit of the scene, and then it just keeps going, and it doesn't like build on it. It doesn't extend it.
Yeah. I have in here the one thing that got like a sensible chuckle out of me is when they're in the bank and they find the hostages, realize they don't have time for it, and just close the door. And we don't follow up on that. Good. Good joke pacing.
Also, all of the hostages are like shaking their heads and going, no, no, no. And then they walk into the most obvious trap in the world. There are hints.
There are hints of good joke writing here.
Yeah. And almost all of it is like stuff that is extrapolated directly like brought up from the short film. I think part of the reason that I found this movie so charming,
mm-hmm.
part of the reason that I ultimately had a good time is that like I like the shape of Amy's arc enough, and I'm so used to being disappointed by the main characters of things, that I was like along for the ride, you know? Like, Amy's arc is about like, you know, you perform really well academically, do a bunch more academics, when she wants to like not do that. She wants to, you know, go to art school. And I, as someone who, you know, mm-hmm. went to art school and now works as a baker and am having the time of my life working as a baker, I don't know. I saw an element of myself in Amy's arc. As like, you know, Amy choosing to like reject the institution and embrace a life of, you know, like personal fulfillment to go be with her supervillain girlfriend. Like, I don't know. I found a lot of like charm and enjoyment in that. I think it shows like Angela Robinson has like a lot of really good storytelling instincts. The movie just isn't good.
No, I do agree with what you have to say about Amy there. She was easily, I think, the strongest part of this, both on a thematic and writing level. The bit that disappointed me and kind of tipped me over into a dislike was Lucy. Like, and how disappointed I was in how she was handled. Amy was good, and I did relate to her a lot.
I think Lucy, not to, you know, script doctor at this point, 21-year-old film,
mm-hmm.
A film that can legally drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like
can't rent a car though.
Cannot rent a car, and depending on where you are, can't get a hotel room. Lucy just needs to be like an evil woman. She needs to be petulant. She needs to, you know.
She needs to have killed all those people.
Yes, yes. They get her off the hook for the murders that are the whole thing that set her up as dangerous. Come on.
Even just like, okay, maybe you don't want to make her a murderer. Maybe that's like a studio mandate. Like, in that case, show us her robbing banks.
Mm-hmm.
Show that she is like, show her getting all these diamonds.
Yeah, we don't get a single like, diamondized from her.
That is true. Huh.
She's just not dangerous. She's just not evil. To reference,
she's.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say to reference our mutual friend Daisy again. I have recently started listening to Friends at the Table. From the beginning, I'm listening to Autumn in Huron, like the very first story that they did.
Huron.
Listen, I've never been able to pronounce a word. and I've been talking to Daisy a lot about it. And like, I got to a point where they're like, okay, is this character actually evil? We've said her alignment is evil. She is making these choices that suggest she might not actually be evil. Is she actually evil? And as a result of that conversation, they double down. They, like, her player, Allie, like, makes more evil choices for the character.
Mm-hmm.
This entire time, I'm, like, watching this movie, and I'm like, is Lucy evil? I don't think she is.
No.
To reference, because you referenced it with one of her sort of devices, she's sort of a doofenshmirtz. Like, schemes are happening, but she's a fundamentally good person.
Genuinely, I think doofenshmirtz is eviler than Lucy. Because, like, at the very least, doofenshmirtz is petty.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. He is occasionally motivated by things such as vengeance.
Vengeance, spite, a tragic backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy doesn't have any of that. She just has bangs.
Backstory.
Oh, like, I want to flag this up very quickly, and then we can move on to, like, you know, something more important. But because you referenced the bangs, I do not blame the writer, director, editor for this. This is the milieu that she had to work with in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. The makeup, fashion, and hair in this movie is fucking awful.
The absolute Y2K drip.
One of my notes does just say 2000s fashion, and then I moved on.
Yeah, we cannot let Gen Alpha bring this back.
During the first, no, I think the Gen Alpha girlies who are into Y2K fashion should get on this movie, because I think that the way that they want to dress is how Amy is dressed during the first kidnapping, when she has the low-rise coochie sweatpants on.
Oh, God, it's just...
If you want to dress Y2K, you should dress the way that they're dressing in this movie, and also don't pluck your eyebrows. They won't grow back.
That is a good point.
PSA to all the youth.
But, like, there's one... there is one outfit in this that didn't make me go, mm. Like, the makeup, not flattering on anybody. No.
I do like how washed out Amy is at spy prom. Like, I don't know if this is what they were going for, but she does look drained and gray and terrible.
Yeah, like, when they are doing hair and makeup stuff to intentionally communicate parts of the plot, I think it's done competently. Mm-hmm. This is not a knock against them. This is just, like, normal makeup in that time period made people look bad. We shouldn't do it anymore.
The very first outfit that Scud is wearing, maybe not the very first, but the outfit he's wearing.
Okay, Scud has some fits, yeah. Actually. I'll say Scud has some fits.
The fit that Scud is wearing when they kidnap Amy and Janet. Leather jacket, like, electric blue t-shirt, mm-hmm. with some sort of red details on it. Red suspenders worn down so that they're, like, drooping over his thighs.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be punky.
And they do the cross thing. Yeah, because he's punky.
When I was in middle school, I wanted to dress like Scud so bad.
You wanted to dress like a backup dancer in, like, a Fall Out Boy music video.
Obviously. Yes. Is what I'm hearing. Yes.
Obviously.
I had not yet watched just enough Gilmore Girls to rewire my idea of a perfect man. I had not yet been exposed to unhealthy levels of Luke Danes.
But yeah, Scud gets away with it because he's doing early 2000s, like, pop punk, which kind of works. Everybody else is not, and it doesn't.
I think I have more notes about Scud than anyone else.
That doesn't surprise me even a little.
Scud, that is not a fit. Scud, you're a real one. I do have a lot of notes about Bobby, but they all just say, Bobby, piss your pants and die. Anytime Bobby does anything.
I did have kill him in all caps for Bobby, yes. Oh, man.
My notes, I just control F for Bobby in my document. Bobby is upset. Amy confesses she is not in love with Bobby. Bobby, I will skin you. Bobby has dropped the bracelet in the soup. It's been 24 hours since she broke up with Bobby. She was upset about Bobby. Bobby, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Bobby, I swear to God. Bobby, I will make you into a lampshade.
You're gonna Ed Gein this week.
Yeah. I want to talk about the bracelet for a minute.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
So they're on the surveillance rig. They're on the window washing platform. And the boys have crashed their stakeout because they're boys. And Bobby is like, we need to have a conversation about the breakup because I don't understand why it happened and you need a reason to break up with me. No, she doesn't.
You don't need a reason to break up with someone. But also, Amy does have a reason. The reason is I'm a lesbian. But
yeah,
the thing about Bobby is that he keeps, like, he says, I need that bracelet back. My dad got it when he graduated from Quantico. Which is just like, we then look at the bracelet and that is the most obvious lie.
It's a women's bracelet.
It's one of those little jokes that does hit, like, because it's like, it's one of those little details that this movie really cares about.
It's a tennis bracelet.
It is a tennis bracelet. It is not a bracelet that your dad got from graduating at Quantico.
And then he gives her a second bracelet, which his dad recovered on a drug bust in Malaysia.
That is like a seashell bracelet, kind of the like broken jaggedy one.
It's a puka shell bracelet. He got that from Aeropostale.
Yeah, like again, there are little jokes that hit. But it's none of the dialogue ones. But yeah. So do we want to talk about Max and how done dirty she was by this film?
Max is an example of the black best friend trope in a way that is trying to be deconstructive but does not land.
Say more.
But yeah, I want to hear Hal's statement on this before I launch into mine, because mine's probably going to be a lot less coherent.
Yeah.
Because y'all seem to have taken, like, notes on documents that have, like, you know, things listed in order. Mine are written on graph paper around a map of my girlfriend's homebrew Warhammer 40K system. Because I didn't have any other paper to hand.
Good lord, you are a lesbian. That's one of the most lesbian sentences I've ever heard. I do, at several points in my notes, have notes where it says, like, this scene, there are several lesbians I know for whom this is the ideal first date. There are several lesbians I know for whom this is the ideal second date.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do want to be kidnapped by a supervillain, but she has to mean it.
You've got a date tonight with a beautiful Russian assassin, Vera coded.
Won't deny that one.
Max is the only black woman in this film, and she's the only black person on the team.
She is also, notably, in the short film, the character of Max is played by a white woman.
Yes.
Like, casting a black woman as Max in the feature-length film is, like, a very intentional choice.
Yeah. She is both masculinized and sexualized in a way that the other girls aren't. And I know that's saying something because they're all in tiny little miniskirts and midriffs. But Max is genuinely, like, not covered as much as the other girls are.
Yeah, I noticed that, like, in casual wear, she never has sleeves. No.
And in her uniform, she's wearing a tank top.
Yeah. The poster for the movie, she is wearing a tank top and Doc Martens, like.
Which, again, from the poster and the pitch, I was like, oh, that's the lesbian one that the movie's about. Because of the boots.
And also the fact that she's in the front on the poster.
She is in the front on the poster.
She also has the biggest gun.
Yeah.
and it has, it's either a scope or a grenade launcher attached to it.
I think it's a scope.
It is a scope that she never uses. She never looks down the scope of this pistol.
Which, to be fair, if she tried to do that, she would give herself, like, several concussions simultaneously.
You know, it kind of goes into what Hal was saying with, like, the masculinization and stuff. And it's like, she has this, like, massive... I don't remember off the top of my head, and I'm not looking at the movie. It's either like a Desert Eagle or like a Magnum. It's enormous.
It looks like a cross between the two of them. I mean, all of the guns in this movie are, we went to Dollar General and got some toy guns and painted them silver, but.
No, they had armorers. I was watching in the credits.
Yeah, no, those were real guns.
They actually had armorers.
Then why do the guns look like that?
Exception of Janet's gun, because it's like, it is painted pink.
Yeah.
But they are all silly guns. It's like, mm-hmm. Dominique has a Magnum, or Dominique has an Uzi, Max has a Magnum. I think Amy has a, does she have the James Bond gun?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. She has the normal sensible gun that you would actually use.
Mm-hmm.
And the others are all like comedy bits, but the comedy bit for giant scoped Magnum is compensating for something. Not French people have Uzis because of the terrorism in the 70s that famously involved Uzis. You know, a joke
if
that's
Max
like,
was the main character, then her giant gun could be a strap joke.
Again, if Max is the lesbian, this movie is better.
If this movie was allowed to make strap jokes, then the gun is a strap joke.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's, yeah.
So okay, so after the initial, oh my gosh, Amy has made contact with Lucy Diamond, live the tale thing. Everybody's freaking out about it because it's a big deal. And Miss Petrie shows up, like, in person. And this is a big deal because she's the head of the program. And she's, like, the headmistress. And she's also, like, the person that you apply for if you want to go to Big Spy School. Like, Debs is community college. And if you want to get your 4-year degree in spy, then you have to apply to a thing that she is in charge of. And Max really wants to do this. And so she's really excited to meet Miss Petrie in person for the first time and like introduce herself, and she's like, I'm the leader of this squad, like I helped train Amy, ma. And Miss Petrie completely brushes her off. She's like, why are you talking to me? You're literally not Amy. And this is what kicks off the like jealousy arc for Max. And the other thing that happens is like immediately after Miss Petrie makes Amy squad leader is Max has this impassioned speech about how Amy doesn't have to try as hard as she does. Amy got the perfect score and she like literally on a test that no one is aware that they are taking. Like she is always like opportunities just land in her lap because she's a pretty blonde girl and Max has to scrabble for everything that she has. And if this character is played by a white woman, it lands way differently than when she's played by Megan Good.
Yeah, there was a line in that bit when she and Amy were talking, because like that frames her motivation I think a lot more sympathetically in that scene than it is in the other scenes where it's played a lot more for like comedy, which is
they
like,
completely
you know,
drop the ball on it.
Yeah, but like in that scene the line she has is something like, you know, you get the perfect score, boys fall at your feet, now you're the team leader and that was the one thing I had. Why can't you mm-hmm. let me have the one thing I had? And I really fell for her in that scene. And then they just decided to not keep that as like a dramatic beat.
It is also like, this is one of the ways in which I think the movie like drops the ball in this regard is that like, right, in isolation, this is just like Twilight, in isolation, this fight is like really good. It makes a lot of sense. It's really well done. Mm-hmm. When you zoom out to the bigger movie, it's like Amy didn't ask for it. Like, this movie is making a lot of arguments about, like, Miss Petrie being stupid and bad at her job, and like, and then it has Max get mad at Amy for something that they both watched Miss Petrie do, and like,
mm-hmm.
I feel for you, Max. You are yelling at the wrong person.
Yeah.
And like, this is an argument for like institutions being bad, right? A charitable reading of the text is like, Max is trying to succeed within an institution that is inherently bad and like racist, and
mm-hmm.
because she is not willing to critique the institution, she's instead yelling at her best friend. But even as I'm saying that, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the only way I can try to make sense of this interaction.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably my biggest critique of this film, other than it being toothless, was just like, the other girls generally, I thought, were very poorly handled and underutilized, but Max in particular, because of, you know, that aspect, which, I mean, you know, Dominique is also like non-white, but she also doesn't have any character beyond being French, so
mm-hmm.
You know, there's not really much to engage with other than the fact that interesting that the other non-white character is the one whose only personality is being French.
Yeah, I like Dominique, you know, is basically just the one joke scaled up, right, from the short film. Mm-hmm. Janet is the one joke scaled up from the short film. Max is the one that they like really like. Angela,
they tried to,
yeah, Angela Robinson on. Really tried to do something here, like really tried to like make a plot line out of this character, and it's a miracle that any movie gets made ever at all under any circumstances. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I
semicolon however comma
could have used another miracle on this one. Is that too mean? That feels a lot meaner than I meant it to be.
I mean, I called this thing decom core as a negative at one point. I'm being negative.
In a world where this movie has another year to exist, I think that they lean into the James Bond of it all, and like, there's a bunch of jokes about Dominique potentially being some sort of token Asian character, but actually the reason that she is othered is because she is French.
Yeah, there's like, there's so much potential. And like, I feel like one of the most successful jumps from short film to feature length is the character of Janet. Partially mm-hmm. because she's the only character to reprise her, or the only actress to reprise her role, right? And also because, like, Jill Ritchie as Janet is the only character to reprise her role, right? I think she does an incredible job with what she's given. And, like, you know, in the scenes where she is trying to get in touch with Amy, like in that montage, it, through mostly just her like facial acting and tone of voice, we understand that like her concerns are changing, right? Like
mm-hmm.
she does a good job, and it's just wild to me that like the best performance in this movie obviously is Scoot McNabb as a stoner yelling Lucy Diamond is here, but the second best performance in this movie is Jill Ritchie as Janet, who is like to her core the comic relief character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went quiet because I was trying to think of a way to say something other than yes, I agree.
Do we have any final thoughts on this movie?
I guess I'll save it for the say something positive bit.
We forgot to do the say something positive bit.
Oh, I thought that was at the end.
No, it usually comes like, it's usually like the second thing we do.
It can be either at the beginning or the end. I think it's also valid to do it at the end. Everybody say something nice about the movie.
I'll just repeat what I just said. I really liked Jill Ritchie in this movie. I think she did a great job with the character of Janet. Easily my favorite performance in the film.
I think they just don't make action comedies like this anymore. I think we need more of these.
They really did have a good run of spy action comedies for a while. Because this was like the same era as like the Get Smart reboot, wasn't it?
Yeah. And again, yeah. Agent Cody Banks is in 2003.
Get Smart reboot also managed to make gay jokes without being homophobic. Which, given that, like, Steve Carell is the one involved in those jokes, and, like, The Office is what it is, a real achievement there.
So for mine, something positive, which I feel like I've been very down on this movie. I did have a fun time with it. I did find it charming. I just,
Deb's drinking game would go hard.
Yeah, I can't articulate like talking about movies without being relentlessly critical, except for Jurassic Park.
Because it's the perfect film.
Because it's my perfect film, yes. But something that I really liked about this that was small, and I need to watch more movies from this era to see if that was this just a normal thing back then, or was this movie being as kind of unique in this as I think
the fact that Amy and Bobby don't end up together is the groundbreaking thing in this movie. Like, I was fully expecting that to happen, for like all of the lesbian stuff to be like, haha, a phase that I went through in community college. And when Lucy and Amy get to ride off into the sunset, it is genuinely, like, for 2004? Like, whoa.
That is like, a big thing that, you know, kind of works for the exact same preamble. The small thing I liked, they all had peach fuzz, and none of their arms were shaved. And I was like, holy shit. I don't think I've seen that in a film. And like, as you know, someone who, you know, like, is a woman who does not do a lot of like, you know, must be perfectly smooth all the time thing. It hit me that like, I don't know that I've seen a movie where just like, the lighting lets you see that these people are like mammals.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually genuinely appreciated that.
Yeah, you can say a lot of things about this movie and the way it portrays women. But like,
which is to say size zero.
But fundamentally it does portray them as like humans in
mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Final thoughts on the film. This is a good bad movie night movie. I can see why this movie is a cult classic. I would agree with that. I can.
Yeah, no, watching this on a big couch with a bunch of other gay people, I would have a very good time.
100%.
Yeah.
Would I watch this one with my mom? No.
Oh, is that a rating scale we have to do here?
No, you don't have to do it.
You don't have to. My mom is a recurring character on this podcast.
Okay. I'll go ahead.
I mean, my guess based on what I know of your mother is that, like, you should not watch this movie with her, but I feel like more than her like objection to the content, I feel like she has like some out of left field objection to like movies that take place in colleges or like finishing schools.
Well, the issue that she would have is that Max is like Christian coded. She's wearing a cross necklace the whole time. Never comes up. My mom would want her to speak on that.
Your mom would want a prayer circle.
Yes. I will say, I do think I could watch this with my dad and he would be charmed but confused. So like, it's not terrible on that metric.
Whit would have a blast with this one.
Mm-hmm. I think he would be more confused than having a blast, but he would be charmed.
My dad once said that there's no reason to think that Thelma and Louise of Thelma and Louise are into each other.
So. What?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. That...
I have two things to say about this movie before we wrap up. One.
Okay.
There is no muzzle discipline in this movie.
No. Absolutely not.
I actually kind of like it with the Debs. Like, I think it's silly. It feels very like James Bond spoof in that regard.
That they're just sort of flouncing around muzzle flagging each other.
Yeah.
Two or three times a second. Yes.
But at the end in the hotel, when they're like, Bobby and the boys, the dudes, are lined up, all muzzle flagging each other, like, simultaneously.
God,
in every possible direction.
There's a bit where Bobby is handing them, like, automatic shotguns to go hunt Lucy. And each of them gets the shotgun and then walks down the hall. And every time, they shoulder it such that the barrel passes cleanly next to his head while they're handling the fucking receiver.
Of course.
Oh, God. I would, like, the armorer had to be really good on this, that no one was, in fact, injured.
Yeah, like, I think that maybe the armorer had, like, the most stressful job on this set.
Yeah, like, getting to set as an armorer and being told part of the bit is that no one in this movie is going to handle guns correctly. And you're just like, uh-oh.
All right, hold on. Let me find the name of the armorer so we can...
thank them properly.
Thank you for not exploding Bobby's head. But yeah. Did you have another final thought?
Oh, thank you to Mike Tristano and Torrance Hall, the armorer and assistant armorer for this film, for making sure that no one died. My second thought for this film is watch Spy with Melissa McCarthy. It's not gay.
No.
But it is a really good spy comedy that came out in like 2015. And I feel like that's kind of the last good spy comedy that I can think of. Like, I feel like that really marks like the end of an era in regards.
Which is fucked up.
Yeah. It's really good. Jason Statham plays the like most beautiful parody of himself. At one point he like walks into a room, gets his pocket caught on a door handle, trips and passes out. it's a wonderful movie. It should have more lesbians in it, but watch it.
Well, that's true of every movie.
That's true. Every movie needs more lesbians.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. At this point, I mostly don't watch them anymore unless there are confirmed lesbians. So thank you for having me on for this one.
Vera, I'm so excited.
You should come back for Oops All Lesbians.
I'm so excited for you to come back for Oops All Lesbians.
What is that?
It's like 2 or 5 seasons from now.
It's season after next, because next season is the all DCOM,
all animation
run. Oh, you're right.
You are in fact doing all DCOMs? What?
No.
Well, I wanted to do like DCOM sports movies.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Ice Princess?
I've not.
That's a movie where a girl is in love with another girl, and then they pair her off with that girl's twin brother.
Oof. Oh, wow.
There really was a lot of... I think there the DCOMs really had a lot of, like, defy gender norms, no, not like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But so next season is Okay, But That Was Gay, where we look at movies that are not gay on purpose. And then the season after that is another Okay, But Is It Gay, which is going to be all lesbian movies, because there's less lesbian movies than gay men movies.
Yes, because of misogyny, yes.
Because of misogyny. And we are going to do The Watermelon Woman.
Okay, I would love to be back on for any, you know, lesbian movie that takes itself, like, slightly more seriously than this one, or is a better comedy. but yeah, so for my sort of final thoughts on this movie that we did watch already, I stand by that this is DCOM core, a genre that I would say includes many non-DCOM movies, Catch That Kid, for example. And I think that's a fun little subgenre of, like, has the look and feel of, like, a remarkably earnest TV movie. Mm-hmm. And I think if you want to see what it looked like if Disney Channel made DCOMs for, you know, 13-year-olds and lesbians, this is a really good window into that alternate universe. And, it, you know, I don't know if that's a better one. That's sort of a frightening one now that I think about it.
No DCOM is this bad.
Oh. I don't think that's true.
That's not true at all. Have you ever seen Luck of the Irish?
That movie is terrible in a lot of ways. But you know what? I remembered the events that happened in that movie in the order that they happened in more than one day after watching it.
And this
is a you problem. I remember this movie.
I also remember this movie. I will always remember this movie.
I also think that, like, every DCOM was, like... The DCOMs were earnest, if nothing else. And I don't... Yes. I think this movie is... It doesn't end up feeling earnest. Like...
That is fair.
And for whatever reason, like, that is, to me, the great failing of this movie, is... Ultimately, it ends up not feeling earnest, and I think that's where
it does feel like it has scared itself a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My final thought, my second final thought, the one moment of just sort of let's say lesing out, I will permit myself here, the jawline on Lucy. God damn. Okay, I'm done.
You can find the show at.
Hey.
Yeah, hold on.
You can find the show on the internet at shovel_ground, because we dig deep here.
You know what's great is that every time I steal the outro from you, I do it wrong. Yeah. I was about to say...
Yeah, it's almost like it's not your script.
It isn't. I was about to say, okay, but is it _ gay?
That's not it anymore.
That's not it anymore.
Our theme song is by Enoff, E-N-O-F-F Music, on Instagram. I am on the internet as Hal is writing, all one word. Z, where are you on the internet?
I am on the internet at Futons in Bulk in most places. Although I am less and less active by the day. Everywhere but Tumblr, and my Tumblr isn't futons in bulk. So, mind your business. Vera,
are you on the internet?
I am nowhere on the internet. You cannot find me. Don't try.
Do you have anything to plug? Hey, listener, what if you, on your podcast app, rated us some sort of star or thumb?
Ideally, 5 of them. And up, ideally,
I think that we're a 5-star podcast.
Or 5 thumbs.
I think that would be great if you gave us 5 stars on whatever podcast platform that you are listening to us on. Thank you for listening, and stay gay.
Stay gay.
Do I do that too? Stay gay. Hi.
That's staying good.
Beautiful. I, yeah. Good stuff.